we've just begun what we call Partnership Month. And Partnership Month is when we begin to talk a little bit about what does it mean to be part of Maybridge Community Church? What does it look like? What does church look like? What does being part of this look like? And to do that, we're going through different books in the New Testament, different letters written by mostly a guy called Paul, who was a great church leader back then, and looking at particular verses which say, da-di-da-di-da, one another. Okay, not da-di-da, doesn't say that anywhere in the Bible. You can Google it, it doesn't. But it says something. And that's what I want us to really focus on this morning. We're looking particularly at a letter that Paul wrote to a church in Rome. And I'll get onto that in just a moment. Because actually, we can learn a lot about what Paul wrote to these churches. Because what he wrote to them, sometimes I think we look at the world around us and we think, gosh, it wasn't like this when I was a child. Or it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like this back in my day. And gosh, all these new modern fandangled, things going on, wasn't like that. But actually, sometimes when we look back, and we look at what the church in Rome was like, we look at what the church in some of those other places in the early Christian world were like, we go, do you know what? Sometimes there's not that much new under the sun. And we can learn a lot from how he talks to them about how to treat one another. But before we do that, I want us to think about something that is particularly relevant at the moment. Because actually, as a culture nowadays, we are really rather divided. And when you look at the news, and when you look at social media, and when you even just talk to people on the street and at work and at home and all over, you start to realise that we're each very, very different in the things that we hold as important. If I were to ask you to name three things that are most important to you, what are your three priorities in your life? I wouldn't necessarily get the same answer from everybody. I might not even get the same answer at all. It might be that all of us are just slightly different. And when we start talking to each other, we might think, my goodness me, why on earth would that be a priority? That's nothing. That doesn't matter. And then somebody else might think the same about us. And we live in this world, though, where actually that's almost the antagonism around that is almost encouraged. There are television programs, aren't there? Lots of them, which are geared around making good TV by sending awkward, difficult characters into situations to rile everybody up and see if you can make arguments. There are whole programs devoted to bringing people in to have an argument in front of an audience. And not a constructive argument, not a let's see if we can fix this argument, just let's see how nasty it can get. I'm going to be honest. I hate television like that. I don't watch it. I don't call it good TV. It doesn't make for good watching. It doesn't make me feel better about the world that I live in. It does quite the opposite. And even when we watch the news and we see politicians now who can't even agree within their own parties, who can't agree on how to go forward, who almost seem to take delight in putting other people down, really personally sometimes. It's moved beyond the policies to just personal attack. It's everywhere that we look, this culture that we live in, this almost delight in people getting into a bit of a barney, people having a bit of aggro. And I don't really like it. And the royals have been in the news as well recently, and we're going to let Prince Philip go. We're going to talk about cars and crashes and seatbelts and age and driving, because I might get myself in trouble, but I do want to talk about the Queen. I don't know how many of you have noticed the Queen being in the news over the last couple of days. And I don't know what you think about the royals, but I particularly liked what she said. And she was speaking to, I don't know if she did things like this, but she was speaking to the Women's Institute at Sandringham. Okay, so she'd gone as their speaker. Fancy being that. That's quite cool, isn't it? I wonder if we could get her to come and speak to Ladies' Fellowship. That'd be cool. That'd be awesome. I'd definitely go. And I'm not old enough, but I'd love it. Right, so anyway, but she was speaking to the Women's Institute. I need to explain that to you because she says something at the end of what she says and it makes sense of it. Okay, and then she said this. She said, as we look for new answers in a modern age, I, for one, I'm not going to do her accent. I'd love to, but I really can't pull it off. I, for one, prefer the tried and tested recipes, like speaking well of each other and respecting different points of view, coming together to seek out the common ground and never losing sight of the bigger picture. Wise words. And she carries on saying, the continued emphasis on patience, friendship, a strong community focus, and considering the needs of others are as important today as they were when the group was founded all those years ago. Wise woman, wise words, but wisdom that goes back centuries. There might be new issues on the table nowadays. We might be talking about things that they weren't necessarily talking about a couple of thousand years ago. But actually that wisdom of having patience, of respecting one another's views, of having an emphasis on patience and friendship and a strong community focus, That stuff applies no matter what it is that we're disagreeing about, no matter what it is that we think divides us or turns us into a bit of an us and them society or church even. And if you go back to Romans and we start to look at some of the verses that talk about one another, you start to realize that this wisdom goes right back to the Bible. Paul was talking about this years before to a church that was sometimes quite divided. So he was talking, just to put some of it into context, he was talking to the church in Rome. And in the church in Rome, there was a whole mixture of people. High-born people, low-born people, people who'd been born into, you know, the aristocracy, people who'd been born slaves. There were women and there were men, and they had a very, very different status in society, slaves and their owners. And then there was also people who had been born Jews, and who were, you know, so they had a different understanding of the way the world went on, and people who hadn't been born Jews. And the people who had been born Jews had grown up with all these different rituals and traditions that they went through in order to follow God well. You know, different celebrations, different ceremonies, different special days, things like Passover, all sorts of things. They had particular foods that they did and didn't eat, and they had all of those things. Now, these people had come to understand that Jesus was like the fulfillment of everything they'd ever believed, so they'd become Christians, but they still did a lot of these other things because they knew that God once upon a time had told them to do these things, and so they still did them. And then you had these other people who weren't Jews and get referred to as Gentiles, and they don't have any of that stuff. They haven't grown up with it. They just know that Jesus has set them free. And the two groups got into bits of an argument. And so the Jews sometimes, some of them, would say, oh my goodness, you know, we're better Christians than you. We follow Jesus better than you because not only do we know that he saved us, but we also eat the right food, we celebrate the right days, and we do this. We're first class, you're second class. But the Gentiles might turn around and go, well, that's all very well and good, but that's because you haven't really understood that Jesus has set us free, even from having to carry out certain traditions and rituals and foods and blah, 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 blah. Right? And they go, so actually, we're first class, you're second class. And so they had this whole us and them thing going on. And it's into that context, or some partly into that context, that Paul is writing some of these verses. And when you start to look at them, now when I got this as a topic, I was like, Romans is an enormous book. There's loads of verses that say one another. How am I actually going to create a sermon that hangs all this together? But when I saw what they were, I thought, you know what? It's like it was meant to be. So it starts off and he says, be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Honor one another above yourselves in Romans 12, verse 10. And then he carries on, live in harmony with one another, just six verses later. And then he carries on again, same, well, next chapter, chapter 13, verse 8, says, let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. A theme is emerging. We should be nice. We should definitely love one another. And he carries on, and he gets a little bit more insistent now. He says, let us stop passing judgment on one another. This is when he's particularly addressing this issue about food and special days. So then, let us pursue the things which make for peace the building up for one another. Again, it's chapter 14. And he's talking here about saying, let's not focus on the things where we disagree. Let's not focus on the things where we have different priorities. Let's not focus on those things and the things that make us different and the things that we disagree on. Let's focus on the stuff that we agree on. Let's focus on the God who is good. Let's actually try and build each other up. Let's find ways of catching people doing something that we like and telling them about it. Let's focus on those things. And he says, accept one another in chapter 15, verse 7. Accept one another just as Christ accepted you. And it's a little bit like Matt talked about last week, and it's a little bit like he was talking about even earlier on. We don't do this thing just to be good. We don't do these things just to be right. We do it because we register that God has been really, really good to us. That we have a God who, before we even knew him, loved us. We have a God who, before we ever even chose to look at him and listen to him, decided to send his son to die for us. We have a God who accepts us with all our weirdnesses, all our wrongnesses, all our, I'm going to make up some more words, you know, but with all the things that are weird and cranky and difficult and awkward about us. That's the kind of God we have. A God who, despite all of that, sent his son to save us. And out of that, surely should be this outpouring of a similar kind of love for all the people around us. Now, I'm going to be honest. Those verses are so straightforward and simple that I don't really need to say very much else. I could sit down and go, sermon over, read that, do that, and we'll all be getting on just great. But that would be finishing a little early, so I shall continue. Because the truth is that as church, we sometimes get it wrong. And we sometimes sit and we sometimes set ourselves up and we look around. And there are many things that we disagree about. And there are things that turn us into us and them. And generally, it's not about what food we eat, although sometimes we can sit in judgment on people who eat too much meat or no meat, or too many carbs or no carbs. We can get there, can't we? We can look at people and think, my goodness me, you don't eat enough. They don't say that to me, it's fine. But, you know, we can start looking around going, well, you've got a self-control problem, or you've got a this. There's a whole bunch of things that actually I think we can look around and go, well, you don't do this right, or you have too much of that, or you don't have enough, and that makes you a Puritan, or you don't expect the Holy Spirit to turn up in the way that I do. You don't seem to feel him, hear him, know him the way that I do, so that means that you're second rate and I'm first rate. It might be to do with we've just got different understandings around certain issues like gender identity or women leaders. It might be, and this is definitely true, in this church sometimes, occasionally, I dare to say, that we've got a different idea of what worship should be like, what song worship should be like, about what our favourite band is, or what our favourite song is, and how we want to sing, and how we want it to be. And it can become a thing where we start to get really quite riled up about it, and people who disagree with us. It might be about gifting. This is one of those things. As I was thinking about it, I thought, do you know what? It can be so easy to elevate some people because they've got a certain gift, can't it? It can be really easy to go, gosh, that's amazing that they can do. I could never do that. They're brilliant. They're a really great Christian. That's like first-rate Christianity. Or it can be really easy to go, well, that person, what do they ever do? I don't even see them do anything because you don't see what they do. And then we begin to categorize people. And it's a load of nonsense. We're going to come on to that in just a moment. And then health, money, things like that. We can really disagree about that, even if you look at the broader church. I've got a friend whose husband is a pastor, actually. He's great. But he's got 2% vision left. He's had a degenerative genetic condition that's meant that his eyesight is slowly, slowly, slowly disappearing. And it's really nearly almost gone now. And he's wonderful. He's a brilliant preacher. He's a great, great guy. But they have had friends who, after praying for them for a long time for him to be healed, said, well, there's nothing left for it. It must be something that you've done wrong. And so you get to a place where you can have people who have totally different views, but who go, well, if you're still sick or you're still poor, then it must be something that God has done to you. Must be something. Must be that you've done something and that so God's punishing you in some shape or form. He's not blessing you because you've done something wrong. Now, I stand in utter opposition to that and go, I don't think that's the way that God works. Certainly isn't what we see in the Bible. In the Bible, we see an awful lot of brilliant, brilliant followers of God who end up in prison, being whipped, being crucified upside down. Terrible things happen to them. It really isn't a good, it isn't one of those little fairy tale endings. Ta-da! Follow Jesus well and you'll have a massive house, massive car. You know, it'll all be brilliant. It just isn't. But you can end up with people really beginning to be divisive within the church. You can end up with the whole church splitting over issues like this. And actually, as we stand here as a church, as we stand here as Marybridge, go, do you know what? Let's see what Paul has to say about some of this, because his wisdom was good 2,000 years ago to a church that didn't know how to stick together and focus on the main thing. And maybe it's good for us as a church as we're looking to what are we going to do this year and next year and the next year after that. What are we going to do? How are we going to hold together? How are we going to be together as this, you know, glorious, muddly, messy, quirky family full of different people with different ideas and different things? There's some stuff that's important and worth fighting for, but it's never worth falling out with people for. There's some stuff that sits at the middle and it's core to what we believe. And that stuff I think we all agree on. But let's not get into a place where actually we're not working together as church in the way that God intended because we're so busy focusing on some of these things that we're not focusing on the main thing. So let's pick up Paul's letter in Romans chapter 12. And he says, therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And Paul was saying, worship isn't just about the songs. It's not just about the prayers. It's about everything. It's about bringing all of yourself to God and laying him down as an offering and saying, God, do what you will with me. Take me where you will. Allow me. Allow my mind to be renewed. Do not conform to the patterns of this world. Now, the patterns of this world are many, but there's one I want to think about in particular, and that's comparison. Now, a long time ago, a president of the US said something along the lines of, comparison is the thief of joy. And actually, more recently, a lady called Anne Voskamp, who I rather like, said this, comparison is a thug that robs your joy. But it's even more than that. Comparison makes you a thug who beats down somebody. You know, we live in a world where people get off on being better than somebody else. You know, we can look at the world and we can look at the magazines, and I've done workshops in schools about this time and time again, about self-esteem and self-confidence and self-image. And, you know, because we look at the things on television and we look at things in magazines or, you know, online more nowadays. That was me showing my age. You know, but looking at all these things and we think, oh, man, my house isn't good enough. My car's not good enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not thin enough. I'm not macho enough, you know, depending on if you're male or female or whatever. You know, but I'm not enough. I'm not enough because I look at all these things that have been airbrushed and they're beautiful and the comparison robs me of my joy because I just don't feel like I match up, like I keep up, like I've got all these things that I can see around me. But the real danger in that isn't just that we end up feeling low about ourselves. It's that actually we can very, very easily turn that round the other way and step out and go, but at least I'm not like that. And at least I don't have their problem. And at least I don't do that as a job. And at least I haven't got that going on with my kids, or at least I haven't got that going on in my private life, or at least, and actually, we choose to make ourselves feel better by at least feeling better than somebody else. And that's a pretty sad way of making ourselves feel better. That's what generally sits at the heart of bullying in a school ground or the workplace, is needing to feel good about ourselves by making somebody else worse than us. And I think that is the pattern of the world that we live in. I think that's what people play off. Well, do you know what? We're better than them, and we're better than them. And we live in a world which talks about equality, but thrives off being better than somebody else, even if it's not spoken, just like that. So let's not be conformed to the patterns of this world. Let's take that and put it over here. Let's not look around our church family and say, well, at least I don't, my kids aren't doing that. At least I'm not struggling with that. At least I don't only get to do that. At least, let's never do that. Let's carry on and see what else Paul has to say. For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment, in accordance with the faith that God has distributed to each of you. For just as each of us has one body with many members, and these members do not all have the same function, so in Christ we, though many, form one body, and each member belongs to all the others. Paul's writing to a church. He said, do you know what? You are all different. You're all different. You look different. You sound different. You think different. You've got different stuff going on at home. You've got different stuff going on at work. You've got different passions. You've got different all sorts of things. But that's what makes you glorious. Your difference is what makes you amazing. Your diversity is what makes you beautiful. As a church, you come together, and you come together in all of that beautiful, glorious, messy diversity, and that's what makes you a good body that thrives well, that has everything functioning, because you've got some people who think about this, while some other people are thinking about this, and between you, you've got it all covered. But don't go thinking you're better than each other. You're not. You need each other. You need to be devoted to each other. You need to not think of yourself more highly than anybody else. You belong to everybody else. You belong to each other. I love that idea. We talk about being a church where everyone can belong, invite, and grow. It's in the right order. That's good. Where everyone can belong, invite, and grow. But you can belong. You belong to each other. We belong to each other. I belong to you. You belong to me. It's one big happy family. And family's messy, isn't it? We all know that from our own families. I don't think anybody here has got the perfect Waltons family. It's not me sitting in judgment on any of you. I just dare you to deny it. We all know that when we go home, you know, there's a disagreement here and there's that there, and there's this part of the family that, frankly, none of us really talk about because it's a bit embarrassing. And like, there's just stuff going on, and that's what family's like. It's what church is like. But actually, this church works as we're all focused on the main thing, and we're all working to where we go. And so Paul says, Romans chapter 12, verse 10, be devoted to one another in love. That's where it starts. And he goes on to talk about what some of that looks like. He says, honor one another above yourselves. Even if you think the other person's ideas are crazy, honor them above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Keep the main thing the main thing. Following Jesus is the main thing. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. That's a challenge, isn't it? Honestly. Bless and do not curse people who persecute you, people who are mean. This isn't just about honoring people who think differently. This is people who come after you. This sits right at the heart of everything Jesus was about. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Don't be conceited. Paul was talking to a church of all these different people, people who outside of church may never have spoken to each other, may have had nothing to do with each other. They've gone, there is no way I am talking to a slave. How shameful. Two people from religious backgrounds so different that they didn't know how to connect. And he says, do you know what? Love each other. Honor one another. Put one another above yourself. Pray for those who persecute you. Love them. Don't curse them. Don't be proud. Do associate with them. Make this place look totally different to the world around it. Make this a place where anybody can feel welcome. No matter what they've done, where they've been, who they've hurt, how broken they are, make it a place where anybody can come in and make themselves feel welcome. That's what church is meant to be like. That's what Maybridge is meant to be like. Keep the main thing the main thing. And I want to finish by bringing it back to partnership, really. Because what does this have to do with partnership? Well, everything, really. Because partnership, really, is about saying, I'm in. I'm up for it. I want to be part of this family. I want to be part of it. I want to serve it. I want to love it. I want to be devoted to everybody, even if I think they're quirky, even if I think they're different to me. I'm in. I choose to be committed. I choose to be devoted to this quirky, strange group of crazy people. I choose to be in. I choose to follow Jesus with them. I choose to love them. I choose to honor them. I choose to be in. I choose to be part of it. I choose to let them accept me with all my quirks and all my weirdnesses. With the gifts that I have, such as they are, I choose to be in. That's partnership. That's what it's about. Being committed to a group of people, some of whom you've not even met, and saying, I'm in. Let's follow Jesus together. Let's serve him together. Let's together see if we can reach more and more people with the news of this great love that he has for us. And we do it, again, not because it's good, not because it's right, not because it ticks off another box and jumps us through another hoop, but because that's what Jesus did for us. He chose to be in, even when he didn't know that we'd choose to be in too. He chose to go all out for humanity, even though most of them would never even recognize his name. And because that's so amazing, he calls us to be the same within the church. This church, his bride, the Bible describes it as, just like him in every way, able to accept each other, love each other, not pass judgment on each other, and be devoted to one another, to mourn together when life is tough, to rejoice together in the good times, to pray with faith that we will see our world transformed, and to learn how to overcome the differences so that we focus on the one thing that joins us. As we prayed earlier, Roz was talking about this old hymn that talks about, turn your eyes upon Jesus, look full in his wonderful face, and the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. You know, when we truly choose to focus on Jesus, these other things, important as they may be, will grow dim. Because his grace, his wonder is so amazing that actually all we can really do is follow him, be like him, and be part of this wonderful church. So I'm going to finish. I'm going to ask the band if they'll come up. But I'm also going to give people a chance to sign up for partnership. Now, I haven't got a slip in front of me, so I can't wave it. I'm going to wave an affirmation slip because it looks almost the same. So if you were here last week, you would have had one of these on your seats. And it's an opportunity to just like physically do that. I'm in, I'm signing up. Now, it's a bit of an admin exercise on one hand, but on another hand, sometimes it's good to physically do something to represent that. Now, lots of you will have done that last week, but some of you won't have been here. I know there weren't enough forms to go around last week. So if you didn't get a form, or if you weren't here, and if you would like one this week and would like to sign up, then the stewards are around, and they're going to hand those out now. And we're just going to have a little bit of music for a minute, and then I'm going to hand over to the band, and we're going to just continue to worship this awesome God that we have. And maybe as we worship, take a moment to reflect and to actually go, God, do you know what? These things that seem so important to me sometimes, actually, I lay them at your feet. I ask you to tell me when I should talk about them, but I really want to just focus fully on you and all that you have in store for me and this church. So if you'd like one of these forms, stick your hand up. Barry's coming around. Oh, lots of hands. Brilliant. Love it. And fill those in. And then the rest of us, maybe let's just take a moment to ask God to point out some of those things in us that we perhaps hold on to too tightly. To perhaps show us where we sometimes stand on a little bit of a pedestal, thinking perhaps we're a little bit better than some other people. Maybe there's some people we've been judging and we need to let that go. I just know that God's got that. That's not our deal to do that. We were never set up to be the judges of one another. It doesn't say that in the Bible anywhere. And let me just pray. So, Father God, we come to you as people who are just blown away, really, by how much you've loved us. How a perfect, pure and holy God can accept broken, dirty, messy individuals. And Father, we just pray that as we become more like you, that actually what that looks like, first and foremost, is this love and acceptance of one another. God, we bring to you the people that maybe we've held ourselves slightly higher than. And we say sorry that we did that. Confess that actually we got that wrong. Did a bit of us and them. Help us to find a way of of just being able to fix that and change that and hold that differently. And those places where actually we put ourselves down and we don't feel good enough, we apologize for that too. Because we know that each of us is a member in your body. Each of us has our place. And that's a good place. We matter, we're important. So God, we come to you and we ask you to help us to play our part in this church over this year. We ask that you will help this church to thrive in unity, focusing on what is good, focusing on what binds us together, focusing on you. God, may we represent you brilliantly to this community. Amen.